My name's Andrew. I'm part of the pastoral team here, and it's an amazing privilege to be able to share with you tonight as we sort of come to the end of our February series called A Greater Purpose. It's the theme we're sticking with as a church for the whole year, so don't forget that phrase. It will come back over the course of the year. But as we've sort of pressed in February, we've sort of launched the year with Pastor Tim Pierce talking about what our shadow purpose is. We all have a greater purpose, but we also have a shadow purpose. Then Pastor Dale, for the past 2 weeks, has shared with us a little bit about what Crossway is doing this year and what our role is as a church in our broader community, right here at home, but also across the nation. So our church has a greater purpose. And then last week, we heard a little bit about what it looks like to be a disciple that multiplies and the character that's required if you're actually going to live out your greater purpose. Tonight, I want to ask you a couple of questions as we sort of put a lid on this series called A Greater Purpose. What if we actually missed our greater purpose? See, as we've pressed into this theme, we've become aware that God has a plan and He has a reality for this purpose, for us, for as a world. He's got a purpose for us as a church, but He also has a purpose for us individually. Each one of us sitting here tonight has a greater purpose. But the thing is, if we're not careful, we might actually miss out on discovering what our greater purpose is. One of my favourite movies is a movie called Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And one of the themes, quotes that sort of stuck out from that movie is a quote by Ferris that says, "Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it." And we all know the reality of this. See, between our jobs, our families, our study commitments, the things that fill our calendar on a day-to-day basis, we deal with the urgent stuff. We deal with the stuff that comes across our calendar, our phone, our diaries, that needs to be dealt with right now. You've got that deadline that's due for an assignment. You've got that big project due at work. You've got family gathering after family gathering. You've even got volunteering and church activities, and they're all good stuff, but does that actually help us find out what our greater purpose is? See, the reality is that we get drawn along in this current of our everyday lives. Study, family relationships, even church activity. And that becomes something that fills our life. But what do we have to show for that at the end of the day, at the end of our week? If you reflect on the past week of your life, what have you got to show for that? Is it your greater purpose? See, as a young adult community, over the month of February, we've been looking at the idea of anything but average. What does it take for us to live a life that isn't just average? And part of that is actually looking about, well, what is average? And so we've done some, well, we haven't done the research. We found the research because, you know, I'm a busy person, right? I can't go and poll the Australian continent. But thankfully, the lovely people at McCrindle Research have. And this is what they had to say about the average Australian millennial. Now, a millennial is someone born roughly after the year 1995 and I think 2012. So if you're born after 2012, you're a Generation Alpha. And if you're older, born before 1995, I don't know what you are. But you're not a millennial, so apparently you're not that important. But there you go. Anyway, the McCrindle Research Group did some crunching of the numbers and told us what an average Australian millennial looks like. Roughly, an average Australian millennial will have, in their lifetime, about 5 careers. Now, that's not jobs, that's actually 5 different career shifts. So from going from being a plumber to being a school teacher to being an executive to being I'd really love to meet this person. You'll have 5 distinct career shifts over the course of your life. You'll live in approximately 15 homes. You'll have 17 jobs. You're most likely to have at least 1 university degree. If you're a male, your life expectancy is 80.1 years, and females, yours is 84.3. Let's not go into why there's a difference there. I just want to leave that one alone. You're most likely to get married at 30 and produce 1.9 children. Again, I don't quite know how that works. I failed year 10 potato maths, but apparently you're going to produce 1.9 children on average. And so if this is an average life for many of you in this room, by the time you get to your 80.1 years or your 84.3 years, this is what you will have achieved. You'll have done your 5 career changes, you've lived in your 17 homes,
You'll have been married since the age of 30, produced 1.9 children, and maybe have one university degree at least. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, they're all great things. I love that. But at the end of my life, at the end of my time here on earth, is that all I want to have achieved with my life? Is that it? Is that what they're going to write about me in my eulogy or say about me at my funeral? That Andrew was born, he had 5 careers, he had 15 homes, 17 jobs. Well, not 17, hopefully, I'm really not up for change. You know, and he got married to a wonderful woman, they had 1.9 children, and then he died at 80.1 years old. Again, it's great, but is that it? Surely my life can achieve more than that. Surely there's more purpose to my life than just this. And I don't know about you, but so often at the end of a week or at the end of a day, I find myself praying, God, save me from a meaningless existence. I don't want to be someone who just is born and goes through the motions and dies with a decent amount of superannuation in the bank and hopefully enough savings to get by until that 80.1 years is done. I want you to think now about somebody that you admire. Just in your head right now, who's that person? When I say, who do you admire, who comes to mind? And why do you admire them? Like, what is it about that person that you actually admire? Maybe it is that, you know, they maintained their ideal weight for their whole life. You know, they were just really fit. They maintained their ideal weight. Oh, did you hear about this person? They're my hero. They got out of debt. They saved up enough for a house deposit in Melbourne. Like, that's impressive. Like, that's actually something that's above average. But the people you admire, the people you respect, aren't necessarily people that just save up enough money to buy a house. They're not the people that maintain their ideal weight or get out of debt. They're actually people who make a difference in the world. They're actually people who have seen something and gone, I can make a difference and I can be an agent of change. See, we get this idea about a greater purpose for our church. Crossway is an amazing church. I loved being here tonight and just experiencing the presence of God so tangibly. I love the fact that we're a church that sees needs in the community and we go out and meet those needs practically as well as spiritually. I love that we're a church that's committed to seeing people beyond our shores become disciples of Jesus, that make disciples of Jesus. I love the fact that we're a church with a greater purpose. But I want to be a person in a church who has a greater purpose. See, there's a question that we can ask ourselves that will help us uncover what that greater purpose is. We ask ourselves, what are we here to do? What am I here to do? What am I here to achieve? What can I actually accomplish in my life that's going to make a difference? It's a big question. It's a scary question. And it's hard to answer. But I reckon there's this one question that once we discover it and we unlock it, we can actually understand who we are and what we've been put here to do. See, this question helps us uncover our greater purpose. It's a scary question. It's a question that will threaten your current reality. And it's a question that can change everything. But it's also the question that can save you from a meaningless existence. And it can help you discover what your greater purpose is. But before we get to the question, let's spend some time looking at someone in the Bible who got this right. In the Old Testament, we find the book of Nehemiah. And Nehemiah is a leader who built a wall and made someone else pay for it. Yeah. Sorry about that. Couldn't keep him out of a sermon. I tried really hard. Not a fan? Don't send me emails, please. I'm sensitive. Anyway, Nehemiah is a leader who built a wall and made someone else pay for it. And we read his story in the book of Nehemiah. So if you've got your Bibles on you, would you turn with me to Nehemiah chapter 1? And here's what it says. The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In the month of Kislev in the 20th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa, Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men. And I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile, and also about Jerusalem. They said to me, those who survived the exile and are back in Jerusalem are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. Now, this happens at a time in history where the nation of Israel had been conquered by the Babylonians and the Assyrians. And a new world power had actually arisen in that time by the Persians. And the Jews had lived in exile from Jerusalem because they'd been invaded by the Babylonians, and then the southern territory was invaded by the Assyrians. And the Jews now lived scattered across the region, with the exception to a few that stayed behind, which is the remnant that they talk about. And we're introduced here to a guy called Nehemiah, a Jewish man who had never lived in Jerusalem, but worked as cupbearer to the king Artaxerxes. Now, what's a cupbearer, I hear you ask? It's an excellent question. Think of someone who is the right-hand man to the king, the lead PA, the Peter Credlin to his Tony Abbott, except probably not that influential. He's the guy that sits at the side of the king and helps him make important decisions. He's a guy with influence. And we hear Nehemiah having this conversation with his brother about the state of Jerusalem. And it's not good. There are people in Jerusalem who are troubled and in disgrace. The place has been absolutely destroyed. This is the city of King Saul and King David and King Solomon that's now been reduced to ruins. And it's not just the place that's destroyed, it's the people who live there, the remnant of the great Jewish people. They live in fear of being attacked by invaders. Their children sleep amongst rubble. They're hungry, they're destitute, they're poor. Things aren't good for the people of Jerusalem. And so Nehemiah hears this news, and he's got two options at this point. See, Nehemiah can hear the news that the reports of his brother that brings it from the city of Jerusalem and go, well, that's really unfortunate. Sucks to be them. Like, oh, I'm really sorry to hear about the people of my cultural background and the city of my ancestors being like that. That must be really terrible for them. Here's some money towards your rebuilding appeal. I'll add you to my prayer list. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. Catch you later. But how often do we do that when it comes to our own worlds? We've got this 24-hour news cycle that fills our Facebook feeds and our TV screens every day where we see people in the most terrible of conditions who are doing it tough, who are in situations that would be worse than our worst nightmares. And we develop this barrier or this like Teflon coating around our heart where nothing actually penetrates it because it's so sad. It's depressing. There are people who have nowhere safe to live. There are people that go hungry every night. There are children that don't have parents. There are children that have witnessed things that even us as adults would make our skin crawl. And that's their daily reality. But it never really hits home. We might donate a few dollars when we're at the shopping centre towards, you know, a rebuilding appeal or towards resettling people. Or, you know, we might add it to our prayer list. And if we remember when we're doing our nightly prayers, we pray for the children of that particular continent. But we kind of develop this attitude where it's like, well, that sucks for them, but I've got it pretty good here. I live in Melbourne. I live in the world's most livable city. It sucks to be you, but I've got it pretty good. See, Nehemiah could have done exactly that. He could have done the thing that we find ourselves doing all the time where we don't really care because we've got it pretty good. But here's how Nehemiah responded to the news that his brother brought. In verse 4, we read, "When I heard these things, I sat down and I wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." We read these first four verses of the book of Nehemiah and we see that Nehemiah's heart was broken. It wasn't something that just caught his attention. It wasn't something that he gave a glib response to and went, oh, that's really unfortunate. I'm sorry to hear that. Let me write you a check. It actually broke his heart. It broke his heart to the point where he sat down, he wept, he mourned, he fasted and prayed. See, the plight of the people in the city of Jerusalem was so moving that it forced him into action. And here's the reality. If you want to find out what God's greater purpose is for you, you need to answer the question, What breaks your heart? What do you see in this world where you see brokenness, you see pain, you see suffering, you see injustice? What breaks your heart? What is it that moves you deep down in your core where you go, that's not okay? I've got to do something about that. Something has to be done. I don't want to just write a check. I don't want to just say the occasional prayer, but this moves me. What is it that breaks your heart? I remember as an 18-year-old, I'd just finished high school and I was heading off to Monash University at Clayton. Anyone at Monash here? Yeah? Excellent. Alma mater. Excellent. Fantastic. I grew up in probably the most whitest Christian private school you would ever find if you like. We had like a class of 150 kids and two of them were Asian. Like, it was the whitest school you would ever found. And then I found myself plonked straight in the middle of Monash University, one of the most multicultural places you would ever see in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. And there's part of me that loved that. It was such a different environment. And I loved it because I was starting university with 10 of my friends from Crossway. We'd been through youth together and we were just starting out on this journey of school's over, we've got our licenses, we're starting uni, this will be exciting. So February came round and we orientated ourselves at Monash at O Week, and some of you guys will have just done O Week this week and that's really exciting. And we would share drive to uni together in my little black Volvo, and we would hang out on the lawns at lunchtime, and it was great. But by the time I hit the end of my first semester at Monash, these 10 people that I'd grown up going to uni, going through youth with, had stopped. Only 3 of us were still following Jesus. It was one semester, 13 weeks, and these people that I'd grown up in church with had come to the conclusion that this Jesus thing isn't working for me now. My faith's been shattered. My faith's been torn apart by all sorts of different philosophies and ideas, and I've got this newfound freedom, and I'm meeting all these people, and I just can't make this Jesus thing work anymore. And week by week, our number dwindled. It broke my heart. Because there's a generation of young people that have grown up in the church. They've grown up loving Jesus. They've grown up even leading and serving in our community. And they hit university and all of a sudden their faith doesn't work anymore. You know, statistics will tell us that if you get a group of 10 school leavers at the age of 18, by the time they reach 25, only 3 of them will still be following Jesus. Breaks my heart. I remember sitting on Friday night with one of our youth leaders, first year youth leader, awesome guy. And he had a rough night leading youth. One kid in particular, he's just really investing in, and it's like, man, I can't fix it. I can't fix what's going on in his world right now. And it broke his heart. What breaks your heart? What is that thing that God's placed inside you that just brings you to that point of desperation? Brings you to that point of pain where you're prepared to fast and pray and mourn and weep. Because if you want to have a life of greater purpose, you need to find out what breaks your heart. There's a quote by a man who you probably don't know the name of, but I guarantee you, you'll know what he's done with his life. The quote says, "Let my heart be broken by the things that break the heart of God." That quote was by a man named Bob Pierce. And the building across the road from our BYD campus is one of the organizations that he started in World Vision. He's a man who traveled to Asia in the 1950s and saw children starving, who saw children without parents and said, something's got to be done. It broke his heart. So he starts an organization committed to caring for orphans and widows in Jesus' name. And that's World Vision. That's his greater purpose. See, once you discover what your greater purpose is the moment you find out what breaks your heart. And I hear what you're saying tonight. It's all well and good for me to have my heart broken for something, but what can I actually do about that? I'm just one person. I'm just a uni student. I'm just a dad. I'm just a mum. I'm just a pensioner. There's not much I can do about that. That problem is so big. It's too hard to get my head around it. Yeah, I hate to see these things happen in my world, but I can't actually do anything about that. I love how Nehemiah actually goes on with this thing. You know, his heart's broken, but he doesn't just leave it there. In verse 5, we read, "Then I said, Lord, the God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keeps his commandments. Let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer your servant is praying before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself and my father's family, have committed against you. We have acted very wickedly towards you. We have not obeyed the commands, decrees, and laws you gave your servant Moses." See, Nehemiah made the problem his problem. He didn't just see this issue, the fact that Jerusalem was in such a terrible state, and go, "My heart breaks for it." He actually makes that problem his problem. He takes it upon himself to do something extraordinary to see change break through in a situation. See, if we're going to discover our greater purpose, we need to figure out what breaks our heart, but then we've got to actually mobilize ourselves to do something about it. We've got to mobilize ourselves and make the problem our problem. See, there's a difference between being a protester and being a catalyst of change. I don't know if you've been following the news lately. You probably have. But after the election of a certain president, we started to see... We started to see pictures like this flood our news feeds. But not my president movement. People upset about the fact that Donald Trump had been elected president of the United States. Now, you're allowed to have that opinion, absolutely. Granted, I'm pretty sure they did a vote, I'm pretty sure he won, and I'm pretty sure 50% of eligible voters didn't actually rock up to vote. So, sorry, he is your president, as much as you like it or not. But something that can actually mobilize this generation to get out there and protest. He's not my president, hashtag not my president. But there's a difference between protesting and actually changing something. See, Nehemiah understood the problem, he owned the problem, and he sought to change the things creating the problem. See, you can complain and you can protest something, and sometimes it's actually a really legitimate thing to do. Like, protesting is sometimes really appropriate. But if all you're doing is identifying the problem and complaining about it and blaming other people for it, nothing's actually going to change. You can paint your signs and you can rally on the steps of Parliament House, but if all you're doing is blaming, nothing is going to be changing. The difference between protesting and being a catalyst of change is owning the problem. Where do you see a problem in your world that needs to be fixed? Guess what? That's your problem now. That's our problem as followers of Jesus. When we see injustice in the world, when we see brokenness, when we see things that need to, when we see people needing to be healed, when we see restoration need to happen, that's our problem. We can sit there and be Twitter warriors. We can sit there and sign change.org petitions. But unless we actually own that and make it our problem, nothing is going to change. Once we discover what breaks our heart, we need to mobilize ourselves to fix the problem. And I know what you're thinking. The problem's too big. I'm too small. I can't actually change the system. I can't change all the problems I see in the world. But you know what? You can make a change. Lucas and Heather are up the back there. I haven't actually cleared this with them, but I'm going to go for it. Sorry, guys. I love what Lucas and Heather do with ARC, because they've seen, which stands for Aussies Rescuing Kids. It's a missional community committed to seeing kids in the foster care system and the adoption system find homes. And, you know, they saw the problem that happens in our state system of adoption and foster care, but they didn't just complain about it. They didn't just write letters to the Herald Sun. They didn't just sign a change.org petition. They actually opened their home to someone who needs a family. They don't need another kid. but they're a family a kid needs. That's what happens when God breaks your heart for something and you make yourself the solution to the problem. Now, Heather and Lucas probably aren't going to take a few hundred thousand kids into their home. But I'm telling you what, it makes a difference for the kids that they do. What's the problem that breaks your heart? And how do you mobilize yourself to be the solution to that problem? I think of some of our young adults who serve as Red Frog Schoolies chaplains at the end of each year. You know, we see hundreds of thousands of, maybe tens of thousands of kids descend on places like the Gold Coast and Byron Bay and a bit more closely to home, things like Phillip Island and Lawn for a week of partying. And this all started because a pastor up in Brisbane called Andy Goulet was at Surfers Paradise one night and he saw kids getting absolutely trashed off their face. Kids doing stupid things under the influence of alcohol and drugs who weren't safe. So what does he do? He goes to the local 7-Eleven and he buys a packet of Red Frogs. He opens the bag and he walks up to a bunch of schoolies and starts a conversation. I tell you what, you're not going to solve teenage drunkenness in Australia in 1 week. But my goodness, those guys make a difference for the kids that they interact with every week. See, these are guys who have identified a problem in their world and gone, I can actually do something to fix that. It was great going up a couple of years ago and actually watching these guys in action, like literally carrying like drunk kids home. And if you've ever been to Byron Bay, like there's not a lot of public transport and it's a long way from anything. Like your calves get a massive workout. And you go, all I'm doing is carrying a drunk kid home from a party. Actually, you're seeing a problem. God's broken your heart about that problem and you're mobilizing yourself to be a solution to the problem in Jesus' name. That's what we're about. So we've understood that, you know, our greater purpose is intrinsically linked to what breaks our heart. And once we work out what that thing is that breaks our heart, we've actually got to be part of the solution. But I think one other thing that we learn from Nehemiah is that in order to live out our greater purpose, he needed to sacrifice. There's one sentence at the end of chapter one of Nehemiah, and it says, I was cupbearer to the king. That's all it says. It doesn't give us much else than that one sentence, but let me tell you this. Nehemiah had a really good thing going for him in Susa. Susa is the world capital city. It's like the world's most livable city. Think Melbourne, but a lot BC. And there's a lot going for him in Susa. He's got power, he's got influence, he's got respect, he's got a really coveted position. He's got it made. He's cupbearer to the king. He gets to eat what the king eats, do what the king does, live where the king lives. Like, there were people that would walk over hot coals to get that position. And God tells him about the situation in Jerusalem. And it breaks his heart. And at that point, he realizes, this is on me. This is my problem now. And that, for him, means leaving Susa, the comfy place working for the king of the land, to go and recruit some laborers and build a wall in a place he'd never been. See, when God breaks your heart about something, that requires sacrifice. And when God breaks your heart about that thing, you'll be prepared to make a sacrifice. I wonder what your Susa is. Where's that place of comfort and security? That place where you have influence, where you have respect, where you've got it pretty good. But in living there, you're actually missing out on the thing that God's called you to do. Where's your Susa today? And I hate to break it to you, but Jesus knew the reality of this as well. And he said it to his followers. In Matthew chapter 16, he says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? Are you prepared to lose your life to find your greater purpose? That might mean giving up what success looks like in the eyes of the world. You might not get to climb the corporate ladder. You might not be able to have those 3 kids, 2 dogs, and a lovely house in Blackburn South with a nice backyard. That was always my dream. Still could happen, but you know, I'm prepared to give it up for what God's called me to do. See, that might mean not having success in the real, in the world, in the eyes of the world. But are you prepared to give up your comfort, your security, your Sousa, to pursue the greater purpose that God has for your life? I looked at we spent January commissioning a lot of our international workers to go and serve God in places that, you know, aren't the most desirable of places to live. Scott and Sarah Morrison were on this stage just a few weeks ago, heading off to Thailand with their 1-year-old son to live for 3 years. Like, why would you do that? Why would you take your 1-year-old son and your family and go and live in a remote province in Thailand? I'll tell you why. Because God broke their heart for the people of his son. And they made it their problem. So they gave up their comfort, their security, the things that made their life pretty sweet, to go and serve God in a place they'd never been, to reach people they've never met with the good news of Jesus. See, when God breaks your heart, you'll be prepared to make a sacrifice. Maybe for you, it's something not quite that significant yet. Maybe it's being one of those people that get up early during the week to head to one of our early morning prayer meetings and interceding for the people of this church, for the people of this city, for the people of this nation. You know, that's a sacrifice, particularly if you're in university. It's a sacrifice getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to pray. But if God's breaking your heart for something, you'll be prepared to make a sacrifice. See, I feel like what God's saying to us tonight is that for many of us, we've been passengers on this bus of church. You know, we've sat there, it's been pretty comfortable, it's been pretty cruisy, but it's actually time for us to get off the bus and start actually walking towards God's purpose for our lives. It's time for us to stop being passive and going nowhere, just going through the motions and actually making a difference with our lives. It's time for us to move. Because there's things that God is breaking your heart for, even tonight. And it's time to move. It's time to do something about it. Because here's the reality. Jesus invites you into a life of purpose. Are you prepared to accept the invitation? Tonight, Jesus invites you into a life of purpose. You might not be building a wall around an ancient city, but you might be called by God into a different environment to step out of your comfort zone, to take risks, to own the problems that you see with this world and commit yourself to making a difference. Because I want to tell you that your purpose is so much bigger than your university degree. Your purpose is so much bigger than the job you currently do. Your purpose is bigger than financial security. And as we allow God to break our heart, as we give God permission to break our heart for the things that break his heart, I wonder what it is that we need to sacrifice in order to step forward in that. Because life moves pretty fast sometimes. And if you don't stop and look around once in a while, you might miss what your greater purpose is. What's God inviting you to step into this year? What's God inviting you to do differently in 2017 that you might not have done in 2016? What's God want to challenge you with this year as you step into your greater purpose, as you discover what breaks your heart? How are you going to move? What are you going to sacrifice? It costs a lot, but once you understand and you start living out of your greater purpose, your life will never be the same again.